I know that many pastors have preached the same thought that I have. It's a fairly common text for Mother's Day. Exodus chapter 2. And we'll read the first 10 verses. This is the word of the Lord. And there went a man of the house of Levi and took to wife a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived and bare a son. And when she saw that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. And when she could not longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and daubed it in with slime and with pitch and put the child therein. And she laid it in the flags by the river's brink. And his sister stood afar off to wit what should be done to him. And the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself by the river, and her maidens walked along by the river's side. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it. And when she had opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the babe wept. And she had compassion on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call to thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee?" And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, "Go." And the maid went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, "Take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages." And the woman took the child and nursed it. And the child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she called his name Moses. And she said, "Because I drew him out of the water." Pharaoh was nervous at the growing number of Israelites within the land of Egypt. They grew from a family, a small family, to, I don't know, David, some estimates have them coming out of Egypt at 1 million. Somewhere in that vicinity. They went down as a family of 12 brothers and a father and wives and children. So just a small group. And they begin to grow. And Pharaoh, new Pharaoh, begin to be nervous. And he called for every son born to the Israelites to be cast into the river, to be killed. And so that's where we pick up the story in Exodus 2, where little Moses was born, a goodly child, and his mother hid him for 3 months until he couldn't be hid any longer. And then she built this little basket, this little ark, this little boat, and she put it, little Moses, into that little boat and set him down on the river's edge, tucked him in there next to the reeds and flags there along the riverside. And then Pharaoh's daughter came down with her maids to bathe and discovered the baby in this little ark. And saved him, salvaged him, and realized right away that he was a Hebrew child. And then sent for one of the Hebrew mothers. Said, "We need someone to nurse this little baby." And Moses' sister ran up and said, "I know somebody." She went and got Moses' mother. And Pharaoh's daughter paid Moses' own mother to nurse him. She nursed him and raised him for some length of time, and then gave him back over to Pharaoh's daughter. And Moses became Pharaoh's daughter's son and was raised in the palace. Now, I absolutely know that Mother's Day is a bittersweet day. I understand that. For some of you, there was no woman on earth like your mother. She was the best thing. Just the best. And maybe she's living and maybe she's gone on, but you have wonderful, fond memories of your mother. There are some ladies like that here this morning. For others, you say, well, my mom was she was a good woman. She was a good woman. She did right by us. For others, your memories are not that special. They're not that good. And for some, maybe your relationship with your mother was really strained, really awkward, or maybe non-existent. So I understand what Mother's Day brings. I didn't invent the holiday, all right? And it's not a biblical holiday, so get a hold of Hallmark about that. The great conspiracy is the Hallmark invents all these holidays. So I understand that. I understand that. I understand that for some, motherhood is an unwelcome surprise. I understand for some, biological motherhood is not possible. I understand that some have lost children. And I understand for some, the whole mother-child thing is filled with sorrows and struggles and heartaches. So I get it. This day is bittersweet. For some it's a bitter day, and for others it's a sweet day. Someone has said that becoming a mother is not so difficult, really, but being a mother can be very difficult. It can be very, very trying and taxing being a mother. Good mothers are an integral part of our lives. Most of us wouldn't be who we are today without that influence of our mothers. Of course, none of us would be here without our mothers. Got to always throw that joke in there, right? None of us would be here without our mothers. Some of the greatest people in history have told us how important their mothers were to them. And I'll just give one quote. George Washington said, "All that I am, I owe to my mother." And this is true in one of the greatest men, the histories of one of the greatest men of the Old Testament, Moses. I believe that Moses became the man that he was because of the type of mother that he had. Rather, the type of mothers that he had. For Moses was a man with two mothers. Both of his mothers made certain choices that impacted this great leader's life. The old saying is certainly true in this case: the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. I want to examine three choices made by the mothers of Moses. Their choices have a lot to teach us. And this will be just a simple lesson, a simple message. It won't be anything deep or complex. Just three simple truths that we can learn from the mothers of Moses. They teach us about love. They teach us about life. And they teach us about a legacy or the skills of leadership that we ought to leave to our children. The first thing I want to point out is these two mothers of Moses, his birth mother and his adoptive mother, they chose, both of them, they made a conscious choice to give this little boy life. The choice of Jochebed was to give her little boy life. Listen, Moses was born in a culture of death. Moses was born in a place where nobody batted an eye to make a decree to kill every male born. That culture of death has been throughout the time, time, the history of time, the time of history, throughout different societies, different peoples. I mean, we go to our New Testament and we immediately find in the Gospels that Herod orders all children two and under to be slaughtered. And so Moses was born in one of these cultures of death. Exodus chapter 1, verses 7 to 22 shows that Pharaoh decreed that male Israelite children were to be killed. Later, he decreed that they were to be cast into the river and drowned. Imagine, if you will, mothers especially, going throughout the pregnancy and then getting close to the delivery and now worrying and wondering whether your child would be a girl. They didn't have ultrasounds. Whether your child would be a girl and would be spared, or whether you would give birth to a boy and he would have to be cast into the river at the command of Pharaoh. When Moses was born, we read it said he was a goodly child. In other words, he was a healthy, beautiful, bouncing baby boy. He was just a perfect little guy. All 10 fingers and 10 toes. Beautiful face, just a goodly child. And Amram and Jochebed refused to kill him. They chose to disobey the king of Egypt, and they hid their little boy as long as they could hide him. You know, though, that a boy gets to a certain age and it's impossible to keep him still, impossible to keep him quiet. You know, the babies, at the beginning, they do a lot of sleeping. And then months pass, and then they do a lot of crying. Right? And Moses got to that place where he probably was doing a lot of crying. And they could no longer muffle the sounds. They could no longer keep him quiet. And when they could no longer keep him quiet, they made that little waterproof basket, that little ark, that little boat. And I know Jochebed, she probably wrapped him in the warmest, the nicest little blanket and put him carefully into that little ark. No doubt in my mind, she wept the entire time. No doubt in my mind, Moses' parents just wept and wept and wept as they packed that little boy of theirs into that little basket. Hoping, I imagine, that he might float to someplace safe. We should admire Jochebed for choosing life in a culture of death. The choice of the princess was the same. The choice of the princess was the same. Pharaoh's daughter comes to the river to bathe, and she sees the floating ark, and she sends a servant to retrieve it, and she sees the baby crying, and she immediately knows this is a Hebrew child. And she's faced with a choice. Follow the laws of her land, honor her daddy's decree. But she had compassion on him. She had compassion on him. A woman who was raised in a culture of death chose for this little baby, chose life. We need to face the facts. We have been for a while, and we are more so living in our own culture of death. Worldwide, 73 million babies are killed every year. 73 million across the world. That's about a quarter million a day. The most dangerous place is a mother's womb. And it should be the safest place. You know a good mother, what a good mother does. She's overjoyed at this little surprise that she's got growing inside of her. If she smokes, she stops smoking. If she drinks, she stops drinking. She starts taking prenatal vitamins. She starts eating for two. Going to the doctor's visits. Doing everything right to protect that child in her womb. But in the U.S., 62 million babies have been killed, Brother David, since Roe v. Wade. About 62 million. That's 3,000 a day for 49 years. 3,000 children in the womb will be killed today. And 3,000 tomorrow. And 3,000 on Tuesday. Contrary to what you're told, contrary to what you are led to believe, 97% of those deaths of children in the womb is for social reasons and economic reasons. 97% of those deaths are for social reasons and financial reasons. 3% are because of rape, incest, the mother's health, or a defect of the baby. Thank God for every mother who chooses life for their child. Jochebed chose life. The princess chose life. And thank God for everyone that has chose life for their child. Even though it's not easy. Having and raising children are not easy. It's not. And no one knows that better than a mother. No one knows that and understands that better than a mother. Now listen, if you've killed your baby, if you made a choice years ago to end your baby's life, I want you to know two things. It was a sin. It was a sin. But I want you to know, secondly, God forgives sin. God forgives sin. Okay? You can be forgiven. And you can move on. And you can have the joy and hope that you'll see your child one day. Moses' two mothers chose life in a culture of death. They both chose love. Both women that God placed in Moses' life loved him more than they love themselves. And isn't that what a mother is about? Isn't that what being a mother is about? Loving your children more than you love your own self. In fact, if you love yourself more than you love your children, you can't be a good mother. His birth mother risked her life by keeping him alive. She risked her life. She knew that by keeping this child alive, she was putting her life in danger. His adoptive mother, the princess of Egypt, risked the wrath of the king. And Brother David, in those early cultures, she could have been killed. In some of those cultures, especially a culture of death, it wouldn't have mattered if it was his own daughter. Jochebed loved Moses because he was her son. She loved him because she gave him life. She nourished him. She loved him. Her love for him allowed him, her love for Moses, allowed Moses to fulfill a great calling, to fulfill a great destiny, to lead a million people out of bondage and bring them to the cusp of the land of promise, where they would grow to be a mighty nation. Jochebed's love for her son did that. The princess loved Moses because God put it in her heart to love Moses. God put it in her heart. And I would say to any woman who's pregnant that it's a surprise, an unwelcome surprise, that maybe you don't like children. There are women like that. I would say, pray and ask God to put a love for your child in your heart. God put this compassion and love for this baby. God put it in this Egyptian princess's heart. There's no other reason to explain why a pagan daughter of Pharaoh would adopt a Hebrew slave. There's no other reason other than God put love in her heart and compassion in her heart for this baby. God moved her heart with compassion on this helpless and hopeless little child, and she took him in as her own, and she loved him as her own. The irony here is that Pharaoh had to pay to raise a child that he ordered murdered. And that one day would come back and cause such havoc in Egypt. Of course, that's not really irony, is it? It's the sovereignty and providence of God. And of course, what woman in here wouldn't think it'd be pretty neat to be paid to nurse your own children? The sovereignty and providence of God. God put love for this child in the hearts of two vastly different women. Love, listen to me, ladies. Well, I was going to say ladies and fathers, but it goes ladies and gentlemen, but let me rephrase it. Mothers and fathers. Love in a child's life can make all the difference in the world. Stop treating your children like they're a nuisance. Stop treating your children like they bother you, they bug you, you wish that they weren't here. Love your children. It'll make all the difference in that child's life. And who knows, it might make all the difference in the world. If you were born into a family and received love, you ought to rejoice and thank God for it. If you were born into a family that received love and were loved and cared for, you ought to thank God for it, because so many are not born into that situation. So many children know they're a bother. They know their parents would rather live on without them. They live every day realizing that they're a nuisance and their parents would rather be without them. Mothers giving their children life and mothers giving their children love is something that should be natural. Should be part of every mother's nature. But sin has corrupted natural affection, unfortunately. Romans chapter 1. I'm going to turn to these and read them because they're powerful to read. Romans chapter 1. Verse 28 to 32. Romans 1, 28 to the end of the chapter. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection. Without natural affection. Implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do it. That is a commentary on our world today. Without natural affection. 2 Timothy chapter 3. Verses 1 to 5. This know also that in the last days perilous times shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. From such turn away. Now we could absolutely say that without natural affection applies to women who love women instead of men, and men who love men instead of women. Absolutely, that's not natural. That's not a natural affection. You know what I'm speaking about. As adults, you understand what I'm saying. But a mother who hates her unborn child and then hates her children in her home, that's not natural affection. And I'm not saying parenting is easy. I'm not saying it at all. It's got its struggles. It's got its frustrations. It's got its hardships. It's got its challenges. It's got its hurdles. Understand that. But a mother's heart will choose life and love for her children. Both ladies gave it to him. And of course, obviously, the life that was given to him made all the difference. But the love that was given to him made all the difference. Love your children. Love your children. Thirdly and lastly, they chose to give Moses skills that translated to leadership skills. They gave him that which he would need in his adult life. Parents, that is absolutely your job. That is absolutely your job. Is to outfit your children with the things that they will need. Not with things. Everybody wants to give their kids things. I want to give them all the things I didn't have. Why don't you teach them all the things you didn't know? It'll be much better. It's our responsibility to guide our children as we see their inclinations, as we see what they're inclined to. We see their strengths. We see their loves. And we ought to help steer our children and give them the knowledge that they will need, the social skills that they will need to operate as good, productive citizens in a world, to be leaders among men, to be leaders among women. Both the mothers that God gave Moses invested themselves into his life. His Egyptian mother gave him the best that Egypt had to offer. Acts 7:21-22. And when he was cast out, Pharaoh's daughter took him up and nursed him for her own son. And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in words and deeds. You know, I love what it says about Jesus. And we know next to nothing about his adolescence. Okay? Next to nothing. We know about his birth. We know about a little event there when he was 12. But that's about it. But we know this. He grew in wisdom, in stature, in favor to God and man. In other words, he learned intellectually. Christ learned what there was to learn. Languages, numbers, skills. He learned how to be social. He learned to be strong. To grow strong and grow healthy. And he learned to be spiritual. Find that. I didn't quote it exactly right, but find it where it talks about those four areas that Jesus Christ grew in. And those are the things we need to grow our children in, those same things. Teach our children to. It's one of the things I love about not separating the children from the rest of the body of the church and sticking them in a basement corner somewhere for the entire time of church. Keeping them in here, you know what it does? It teaches them. Early, it teaches them. Well, not only do they get to hear their pastor preach the word of God instead of playing silly games and looking at a flannel graph. Not only does it do that, but these young men and young women at a very young age will be able to stand shoulder to shoulder with an adult and carry on an intelligent conversation. All my boys at a young age could stand in a group of men, listen, and contribute every once in a while. Young men. It's because they were raised around men. The men of the church. His Egyptian mother gave him the best education that she could give him. The wisdom of the Egyptians caused him to be mighty in words and deeds. History tells us, and I don't know, David, but history suggests that Moses could have ascended to the throne and been the next Pharaoh. You might know better whether that's true or not. I've heard it, don't know if it's true. But he was trained as a leader. And that would serve him well for his God-ordained job. And his birth mother gave him something that his adoptive mother never could. She introduced him to the God of Israel. Remember, she had him as a young boy. I mean, she had him until he started crying and they couldn't keep him quiet. Then she put him in the basket. Then the princess saved him. And the princess says, we need to find a Hebrew that can nurse him and raise him up for a while. I don't know what to do with a little kid. And because Moses' sister was there watching from behind a bush, she ran and she said, I know someone who can nurse him. And it was Moses' own mother. She nursed him and she raised him. How long? I don't know. But she would have told him about Abraham and Isaac. She would have taught him about Jacob and Joseph and how that they came to be down in Egypt. She would have told him about the promises of God for Israel and the land that he had promised. She would have instilled in him a love and respect for the God of Israel. I'm not going to go there, but if you look at Hebrews 11:24-27 and Acts 7:24-29, you'll see that his birth mother planted in his heart a love for his own people. the spiritual lessons that he learned from his birth mother and the secular lessons that he learned from his adoptive mother set the stage for the course of his life. And so it is with our children. And listen, parents, while you're teaching them life skills and you're teaching them manners and you're teaching them social skills, do not overlook the spiritual lessons that your children need to hear from you and be reinforced by me. I can't begin to tell you how many times I have preached and a parent or a family member, somebody has said, we just have been talking about that. We just have been discussing that. We've just taught that to our children. Our children just read that. It's your job to raise them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And I will reinforce it as long as you have them here. The spiritual lessons that he learned from his birth mother and the secular lessons they learned from his adoptive mother set the stage and the course for his life. And we need to steer our children and guide our children. Listen. Parents, be wise enough to know that you can't just grab the state cookie cutter for your children. Your children are individuals. And also, let me state this, they are different than their siblings. Do not force your children into anyone's cookie cutter box, whatever analogy you want to use. Teach them the skills that they will not learn in other schools. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and say, teach them at home, amen. Give them something that the universities won't give them. Give them something that the public education won't give them. Give them something that the extracurricular activities cannot give them. Give them a knowledge of the true and living God. Give them real life skills. You know the joke, the joke today is, here's a man, he's $175,000 in debt. He's got this degree and he's working at Starbucks. And here's the kid that was laughed at because he went to trade school. And you know what he's doing? He's making $70,000 a year. Don't just go with the flow and cookie cutter your children. Give your individual child what they need. And they're all going to be different. But more than anything, give them a true knowledge of the living God. God providentially prepared Moses for his role as the deliverer of Israel through two mothers. Their influence made Moses the great man that he was. Mothers, listen. I admire you. I'm thankful for you. I thank God for my four daughter-in-laws. Wonderful women. Wonderful mothers. And I know it can't be easy. Okay? I know it can't be easy. I know I could never, ever, ever, ever come close to doing what you have to do. My wife suggests to me, one of our grandbabies needs a babysitter. Nope. Only when they can poop in the potty and only when they can keep themselves occupied with a toy. Only when they, because I know. Now, my grandchildren, they all love me, but from afar. They admire me from a distance. When that distance closes, they start getting panicky. And just a case in point, one of my grandchildren, I'll keep names out of it to protect the guilty. My wife says, now, you watch them, no pronouns. I'm going to go out to the car and put the car seat in. I'll be back in just a minute. I said, it ain't going to work. It's not going to work. Distract them. Get them a cookie. Turn on a children's. Do something. Distract them. A book. Get a book. Not going to work. I distracted the child. Shannon ever so quietly, nonchalantly, went out, closed the door very quickly. The crying commenced. And then it turned into panic and screaming. And now I'm panicking and I'm melting down. And she came back and I said, see, this is why I don't watch these kids. I can't. She said, they sense your negativity. Mothers, I can't do what you do. My daughter-in-laws, I can't do what you do. You do it so well. I thank God for you. Let's give our children life. Let's give them love. And let's give them leadership skills so that when they step out into the world, they will be a leader of men and a leader of women. May God bless this message to our hearts. And listen, some of us, there are several families in our church that are deeply involved in their grandchildren's lives. And this would apply to you as well. May God bless the teaching and preaching of His Word. May God bless His little flock at Beth Haven. May God bless each mother of our church. Let's pray. Father, I pray for our